So I think this is a sort of rebuke to you.
Me?
Well, it can't be me.
What have I done?
Because, you know, we did the questions last week.
Yeah.
And you wanted to ask your question about, you know, what is church? What's it for? What's the point? And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. How would you design it? What would it look like for mid-faith crises?
And as you know, there's a massive sort of problem with the level of response to that.
Yeah, there is. That is true.
It's far too much.
Yes.
And that's meant quite a lot of reading and work.
Well, I thought the maximum reply we'd have was 17. So someone's been misleading me.
Yeah, I think so. Somebody has written in twice, I think is what we're saying.
And changed their name as well.
So we just got masses to get through.
Yeah, we had. Well, thank you for the rebuke and get on with it.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 271 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there on a slightly delayed Zoom call is Joe Davis.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. We have got a packed show.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. Such a big response. It turns out everyone's got an opinion about church.
They do indeed, absolutely. And and very varied opinions as well. So
yes.
we're going to have a sort of really packed feedback kind of show, trying to do justice to all your responses. Thank you for that. Before we go there, obviously, there's the how are yous. And before that, there's the church notices. So, you know, what have we got here?
Well, I have got a church notice, actually. I hinted at it before, but our dear friend, Dave Steele, from one church, and I are doing, we're hosting a conversation, basically, one of our Staying Defiantly conversations. It's going to be held on Thursday, the 18th of April to Friday, the 19th. So midday on the Thursday to about 4 o'clock on the Friday afternoon. We're going to do it in Brighton. And we're just going to, we're throwing this out to church leaders. I mean, why are we doing it? Oh, look, I'll read the garb that we wrote. Churches are struggling to hold together over issues of human sexuality, biblical interpretation, and the exclusive claims of the Christian faith. And in the midst of this, many leaders feel their faith morphing and changing as they seek a more authentic way of living. In this emerging context, how do we lead through our own theological dissonance and uncertainty whilst living out the honesty of what God might be doing within us? That's why we're doing it. We're doing it in Brighton. It's for any leaders. It doesn't have to be paid clergy. You know, if you're a leader in the church of any kind, if you feel like you're leading people, that's it. We're just asking a donation to cover the cost. We're suggesting £60, actually, for the 2 days. That will include some food, but not all. And it doesn't include accommodation or dinners and things like that. So you need to know that you've got to sort your own accommodation. You've got to sort out something. But we can make recommendations for all that. And we'll try and go and find somewhere not too expensive to eat together. And if you want to sign up for it, then there's an Eventbrite page and you can reserve your place. And we'll post the links on our Facebook page and no doubt the show notes. How's that?
Well, it's very interesting. I two things occur to me. One is you spelt dissonance wrong.
Did I?
Yeah, you know, which is obviously the most important fact in that whole thing. And I was unable to concentrate on the rest of it after seeing that. And the other is it's a conversation and it's 2 days. What's it? Yeah. How slowly are you talking, for heaven's sake? You know.
Well, imagine, if you will, 20 people talking about that kind of stuff. That's going to take a while, isn't it? It's not 5 minutes.
You've just launched a church conference, is what you've launched.
No.
You have. This is the thin end of the wedge, because 1 minute they say, yes, stay as a Baptist pastor, and then before you know it, you're organising church retreats.
Listen,
and conferences.
It needs to be a conversation. And here's the thing, because normally when you do things, you want a lot of people to respond, you know, the bigger the better kind of thing. But now we need, like, not too many people to respond, but enough people to respond. And how big should it? I don't know. We'll come on to this when we start talking about churches and how big they should be.
I look forward to seeing the car crash. Now, anyway, how are you?
Well, you know, I'm all right. I'm all right. I had a really lovely weekend. So the weather was good, you may remember.
Mm.
And I took myself off to the kind of bottom eastern corner of Kent, and I went to Rye Nature Reserve, and I went to Dungeness RSPB, and I saw lots of birds, and that made me very chilled and peaceful for a little while at least. So that was a really lovely weekend.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good. Of course, Traitors finished. You know, we got
Traitors.
Oh my gosh, how compelling was that ending, eh?
It's amazing.
It was tense, wasn't it? It's very well done.
It's superb show, I thought.
It was good. Yeah. And listen, you know, you're like championing like every week something like Waitrose chips or anything. May I put in a word for the best chicken korma I've ever had? And this is the offensive bit, and I apologise to Indian listeners here, that I think Charlie Bigham's chicken korma is better than any korma I've ever had in an Indian restaurant. I'm just throwing that out there. It's so delicious. It is incredible. So, yeah, I'm just saying that. I don't get commission. We should get commission. Shouldn't we be sponsored by it? Everyone? Because at least 17 people may be tempted to go and eat some of the things we recommend.
They might do. Now, hang on a minute. Charlie Bigham's is like one of those ready meal things, isn't it?
It's one of those ready meals, but they're spectacularly good. You know, some ready meals are very overly salty, and they just feel a bit reheated and not very good. Whereas this really feels like a freshly prepared. I'm a big fan of the Charlie Bigham's.
And did you have this because you're essentially a bachelor at the moment?
I am a bit of a bachelor.
Is that why it was? Were you suddenly doing ready meals for yourself
could
in the microwave?
Could be. So, yes, Rachel is herself retreating at the moment.
Yes.
From me, it turns out. So,
clearly are not looking after yourself properly. You're eating microwave ready meals and...
It's not microwaved, it's in the oven, just saying.
Okay,
but yes, that is the case. How about you, my friend? How are you doing?
I'm all right, actually, yeah, I'm not bad. A few sort of little health niggles and stuff like that, but we'll get there. Traitors, yes, was good. Yes, we won't go over that, but it was fantastic.
Mm.
Had a lovely service, actually, on church on Sunday. They didn't do the normal Eucharist, they did a... just a memorial service where we thought about people we'd lost and we lit a candle. And, you'd have loved it. It would have given you a nice break from where you are at the moment.
That's a good thing. The opportunity to focus on grief.
No, but I thought of you good. And I thought, you know, and I lit a candle. And, you know, I think it's just a good thing to do, isn't it? It's
nice. Really,
interestingly, how many people from outside came in. And you had a number of people who hadn't seen before. So that was good. And yes, okay, food recommendation this week is something slightly different. It's a drink recommendation.
Is it?
Cider. I don't know if you're a cider man, actually. I don't recall ever drinking cider with you.
Oh, I have been known to, yeah.
Cider is, of course, vicious and one of those things that, in Billy Connolly's words, gets you drunk from the legs up. You know, because you drink it and you think this is lovely and it's very refreshing and easy, and then you can't walk for a reason. But the rest of you is absolutely, you know, fine. Anyway, cider, had some lovely cider recently from the wonderfully named Tutt's Clump Cider Company.
Okay.
And I would recommend Tutt's Clump Cider. It is available in some places. It's fairly regional, actually, I think.
Okay.
But they do a number of things. We had one yesterday, which was sort of... sort of Berkshire Diamond, it's called, which is quite a dry one. And then we had a Forest Fruits one, which is really nice. It's like, you know, Ribena, but very bad for you.
Basically an alcopop. Well done for promoting that on the podcast. Great.
Tutt's Clump Cider. proper cider for proper people.
Okay,
that's
good.
Not a good phrase. Anyway,
no,
right.
Yeah.
So look, we need to move on, and we have been inundated.
Yes, we have.
With responses to this question. So we have a lot of feedback, which we're going to just, I think, alternate between us and sort of motor through. But for the you've got a couple you wanted to share with me before then.
Yes, indeed. Well, they're not to do with how you design a church or anything, but Gail wrote in and said, finally, after 270 episodes enjoyed, I feel inspired to write. And what she's written in about is a worship song, a praise song that she's recently been singing. She said, "I love the general gist of this song, but I'm not happy about singing the line, and here it comes. Praise is the water our enemies drown in."
Lovely.
Yeah, that's a nice sentiment. She says, I've been told it's a metaphor and it's biblical from Exodus, but all enemies are people in the Bible, and Jesus told us to love our enemies, not drown them. Discuss.
It's hard to justify that. Like, I suppose it depends what enemies you're talking about.
Yes.
Doesn't it, really? Are we talking about metaphorical enemies?
Yeah.
You know, our fear, our anxiety, our self-loathing.
Yeah.
And are we talking about metaphorically drowning them? They are the enemies who are chasing us, and we want to escape them, and God gives us, rescues us from that. I'm just riffing a sermon here. Is it going well?
No, I would say no. I'm not convinced that praise will actually do that. It may distract you for a little while, but I think it takes a bit more work. That's my best. I think there's no defence of that line.
No, not really.
I think I wouldn't sing it if I was in a church and ever singing.
And I mean, even given what you've just said, the best line you could come up with that would be, "Praise is the water which momentarily distracts our enemies by being splashed at them."
There you go. That would have been a better line, in fact. Thank you. Okay, and just from Phil, he said, "Following your rant last week about praise," he says, "I asked AI to write you a song of praise." This is you, Nick, because you remember you were complaining about God getting all the praise and you not getting it. So AI came up with a very long song, which I have no intention of reading out. The last line went, "Oh, Nick Page, bard of wit and light, may your pen's fire burn ever bright, inspiring us to laugh and learn, to question, doubt, and then return, with open hearts to grace renewed by words that build, by thoughts pursued. So sing his praise, let voices rise to Nick Page, weaver of the skies." I mean, there was a whole song of that. There were about 8 verses and choruses. It went on.
I mean, I'm loving it, really. I think the last bit, weaver of the skies, I'm not quite sure means.
But it rhymed.
It rhymed, yes. But I mean, the rest of it sounds pretty factual to me, to be honest.
It's good. He also wrote back because he asked AI about Ethel Sad Old Person. And it turns out that AI immediately responded with, "I can only find Ethel Sad Old Person from the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast." And it says and amongst other things, it said in episode 28, Lots of Books, she is mentioned as sharing her top 5 books that transformed her understanding of God and Christianity. This implies she's actively engaged in the podcast's religious discussions. And then it suggested that he contacted the hosts of the show for more info.
I think that shows the limitations of AI. I don't recall her top 5 books being shared, but maybe it's a long time ago. Maybe we did put them in.
Who knows?
I imagine the works of John Calvin would have been high up there. But,
yeah. Definitely.
So anyway, listen, we should move on. How are we going to do this? We've got so much email to respond
yes,
to.
Yes, we have. Well, let's set it up, because last week we asked the question, if you could design your own church for today, with where you are at faith now, in your faith journeys, kind of post mid-faith crisis or whatever, what would it look like? What would be important to you? What would you do and not do? And hence an overwhelmed inbox and comments on Facebook. So I think, you know, there were lots of sort of general themes. And what was really lovely amongst the sort of, you know, fantasy churches that people were describing, some people wrote in and said, "Do you know, my church is doing this and it's really brilliant and I love it." Mm. So there's some really positive content here, as well as some themes I think that are really interesting. So I suggest we just start going for it. And I should say, apologies if we don't read your out. Some things were quite similar. We had to try and draw together similar themes. So if your one picked up on the themes, we might read yours and not others. But apologies for that. We are so appreciative of everybody that wrote in. We really are.
And I think it's got every chance that we will continue this next week. So, you know, if you're not in this week, who knows? Yeah. With might go for years, this.
Yeah.
So shall I start then?
Yes, please
do. I'm going to start with Paul from Australia.
Yeah.
Hello, Paul. Who shared, in fact, with his family, asked his family, I think, and they decided that their ideal church would be meeting in our or someone's home with anyone who wanted to come, reading one passage of the Bible, just the one, reflecting on it together, then breaking bread, quote, having a meal with a glass of wine in remembrance of Jesus, much like the early church, and dare I say it, much like Joe's Soul Place, but only once a month, please, I've had enough church to last a lifetime.
The last comment is revealing. So there you go. I'm guessing that implies a slightly smaller church, not a mega church. I don't see a mega church meeting in someone's home.
Certainly not once a month.
Struggle to fit 2,000 in our house. Now, Mark wrote a great email. He said, "Hey, Joe and Nick, I love the model of church we have." So here you go. He says, "We have a kind of three-layer model, which is built around ever smaller group size with increased depth of relationship as the group size shrinks. This is modelled on the crowd, the 12 disciples and the three. Most meetings involve some form of food, again modelling much of what we see in the Gospels. We meet collectively on the first and third Sundays for breakfast, worship, sharing or a message followed by prayer. Prayer is always at the back to avoid people staring at those being prayed for. We aim to be done in 90 minutes. There are small groups called hubs that meet on the alternate weeks to the service. Hubs are where the life of the church happens and they are typically less than 15 people. Hub always starts with food and people bringing something to share. Material is provided in the form of a video discussion produced by the leadership so that something that starts on a Sunday morning is followed the next week in a hub and then back to Sunday, back to hub, etc. Hubs are there to meet the need of their community and to be Christ to the world around them, in addition to providing support to the members. The hub keeps in contact via WhatsApp when they are not meeting. Finally, there are discipleship groups of 3 to 5 people who meet to do the deeper work with each other. We have people who do all of these combinations. The group has a set pattern of picking a psalm, reflecting on it, talking about what it means to them, and then praying for each other. There is an ongoing commitment to prayer for the other group members. Some groups do include food, but it depends when they meet and how much time they have." So there's an illustration of a church operating on a slightly different model altogether.
A much more frequent model. And, you know, I'm picking up already a food theme.
Yes.
I suspect will come out regularly.
And may I affirm that food theme?
Yes, indeed. So on to Mike.
Yeah.
Mike says this: "Yes, church is a family of people, but those people need to get together somewhere so that they can be people together. And I reckon a weekly meeting is a good idea. Not set in tablets of stone, things get in the way, but as a general pattern so we don't lose contact with each other." So he's advocating for a weekly.
Yeah.
But he goes on to talk about spaces. He says it needs to be a safe space where you can go however you're feeling and know you'll be accepted, loved and encouraged on your walk with Jesus. A place to be encouraged, to remember how great, powerful and loving our God is. Some, he says, will enjoy singing about this, but this isn't essential and the music needs to be used sensitively. So perhaps no drowning enemies.
Mm.
It's a place to celebrate what God's been doing with and through the church during the past week. It's a place to listen to what bits of the Bible may be saying to us as a group and individually, with space to reflect and pray. It's a place where you can expect people to ask you, how are you, and really want to know how things are for you. And to listen to you as you try and work out how you really are. It should be a place where strangers are welcomed and where they're loved and not preached at, where God's allowed to do his work in them and for us, not to interfere and get in the way. Finally, it should be a place of relationship with one another, where we explore and celebrate what it is to have a relationship with our loving Creator God. You know, lots of stuff in there and themes that are going to come up again and again of acceptance, of safety, you know, of listening to one another. Also, I think a theme that comes up over all the emails about space to reflect. Space to listen.
Yeah, that's good. Stuart on Facebook said, "A good dose of silent prayer, having a meal, a few beers and Holy Communion, some singing too, a bit of lament when appropriate as well."
Well, I like the beer. I mean, I'm there for the beer or possibly Tut's Clump Cider. I'm open to that, really. Music already has cropped up and people's responses to it.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting a touchstone, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Andrew wrote in and he mentioned cathedral worship, specifically Coventry Cathedral. He says this: I love the music, the liturgy, the traditional hymns and the formal style of worship. And I find that this helps me to tune into what I can best describe as the mystery of God.
Mm.
And I think that's I've experienced that in sort of very formal, what you might call high worship, high church. You know, you do get that wonderful sort of sense of mystery, I think. Yeah.
Whereas, of course, some are not so fond of singing. Elaine wrote in and said, point one, not much singing. there you go. And then inclusive, wherever you've been, wherever you are going, you are welcome here. I love that. It says a place where I'm seen, visible, known, a place of authenticity and integrity, enabling, encouraging, less hierarchical, food and family, and many others, I have to say, picked up on the theme of inclusion. Like Lisa on Facebook, she felt it was very important for all ages to be together and accessibility issues to be addressed. Mm. And then others wrote in saying just the importance of, you know, like whatever your sexuality is, you're welcome here. And we're not going to do the whole line about, well, we love you, but we can't agree with all this sort of stuff that is not seen, perceived as inclusion. So there were a lot of comments around sort of those kind of things. Yeah.
So that's covered quite a lot of ground straight away. What about if we look at some of the places of where people would like to meet?
Yeah.
Over the years, I think I've become more attuned to this. I think when you sort of grow up slightly evangelical, you kind of think place doesn't matter. You're kind of told that, which is true on a very, you know, general level. Of course, you can meet with God anywhere. Mm. But I do think the environment matters. Anyway,
yeah.
Phil wrote in and he said this. He said, for the first few years, I was fortunate to be part of a small group of like-minded souls who met as a kind of unattached home group. This, along with a certain podcast, I don't know which one that was, was a vital support to my faltering faith, helping to ensure it didn't come completely crashing down about me. Then about a year and a half ago, we moved house to the Isle of Wight. And here we have the wonderful walking church.
Oh, this sounds so good. This sounds so good.
It depends where you're walking. Started and led by two ordained priests, but not linked to any organised church. We meet one Sunday morning each month, gathering at a different location each time. We begin with a short reflection, perhaps a poem or other reading, before setting off to walk at an easy pace, chatting as we go. After about an hour, we stop for another short reflection before walking on in silence for 10 minutes or so. We briefly stop again to conclude that time of silence before walking and chatting back to the start, where we'll end with a final short reflection or prayer. We'll then usually find a cafe for food and drink and further conversation. It's a wonderful way to connect with creation, connect with each other, and hopefully connect with God.
Well, that for me, that said it all. Let's do that model.
Just want to move to the Isle of Wight, really, now.
I do. Let's start the cult of mid-faith crisis on the Isle of Wight.
Indeed.
Oh, brilliant. That is so good. Thanks. And then Emily wrote in. She says, I'm part of a church leadership team and part of a small group, but what brings me most joy is gathering with five others, my husband and two other couples, for the Thursday night pub quiz. If I could meet with these people in a pub, maybe with food and talking about God and life and praying through stuff together, I think I'd be pretty happy. Maybe once in a while we'd worship with singing, playing instruments together too.
And Fee wrote in and she said, well, we just had a cracking Sunday morning. Some of us went for a walk together. Some went for a run together. Some did some creative craft activities. Some socialised around newspapers. Then we all came back together for breakfast, a brief responsive prayer, a reading from our daily Immerse reading plan that most of the church are doing, great sense of church family, all age, guests present. No one wanted to leave to get home for Sunday lunch.
That's great, isn't it?
Sounds good to me.
I am.
Apart from the running, I don't think I want to do that.
I don't think you're forced to. I assume not. Imagine that. Anyway, there's been lots on the theme of openness and honesty. Hazel wrote in and she shared some of her experiences of church and then went, "Recently, I reluctantly joined a slimming world group and I came home and said to my hubby, I wish church was like that. There we sit in a circle and keep it real. It's based in quite an impoverished area and it's pretty gritty at times. It starts off with some input from the leader, like how can we add more veg into our diet? And then she goes around everyone in the room and asks how their week has been and tries to relate her talk to everyday experiences. It's transparent. We talk of our weight gains as well as our losses. Folk tell it as it is, too much drinking, binge eating, sicker sweeteners, hate veg. And I find its honesty and sense of community refreshing. Everyone pitches in to encourage the other, particularly those who are feeling fed up. How I wish my church was like this." There you go. Slimming World. And of course, we've heard many people likening a model of church to Alcoholics Anonymous as well. Mm. That actually, that's a really terrific meeting for transformation. So I guess similar themes there.
Well, as you say, sort of honesty and openness. Vicky suggested the church should be a small group of people to do life with, a place to be honest and open. Once a week, a meal around a table, plus WhatsApp updates. Okay, yeah. No singing, she says. Yeah. Some kind of input that moves us on in our thinking and action towards Jesus/love/the divine. Some silence at the end with a lit candle for prayer. Occasional special events like a nature walk or a day retreat. But then she goes on to say, the only issue with this is that it isn't necessarily very inclusive because I can only invite people I already know and there's a limit on numbers. But I think that would have been true in the early church too. Also, it isn't very inclusive of my kids as they don't want to get involved with it. And if they were around the table too, it would restrict what we talked about. So not perfect.
Yeah.
But good, but interesting. And I think, you know, as much as anything, picking up on what all of this is sort of picking up on what people feel is missing from church, at least the ones that are talking about what the kind of church they'd like to see. You know, there's bits there that we can think about. Yes. I mean, whether you have children, an interesting question, I think.
What, whether you should actually have children or...
No. I mean, obviously, yes, quite interesting in and of itself. But perhaps for many of us, that ship has sailed. But, you know, no, it's a question, you know, whether how far... Because a lot of these are quite quiet, meditative things, you know.
Yeah.
Where's the children in this? I think the early church, the children would have been there, but probably under severer... penalties.
Yes, sure, yeah. Okay, well, and then lots of people have said a place where you are truly known. I think we've already heard that sort of coming through. Sheila wrote, safety and trust, small numbers, a place where we are known and loved, group leadership, no one person making all the decisions, time, space, prayer, food, laughter, tears. That's nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Sheila. Yeah.
Mm. And then I think ending for now, we've got loads, so
yeah,
we'll come back to them, I think, next week.
Yeah,
but this is from Simon, and it's I think it's a nice a nice sort of summary in some way. He says, "I think church at its core is bound to the person of Jesus, a relational community of people that are interested in living a life that is focused on the way of love that we can see Jesus lived and taught. The key for this community is orthopraxy rather than orthodoxy." So it's practice, doing stuff rather than what you believe. "How we live is more important than what we believe. If we were to have a creed, perhaps it would be as simple as the very earliest Christians, Jesus is Lord," or that he suggests a slightly expanded version in 1 Corinthians 15, 3-5. I'm sure we all know that.
Of course we do.
Off
yeah.
by heart, so I'm not going to...
Don't insult us by even reciting
just
it.
In fact, hint at it. We're prophets. Anyway, no, and then he groups them under certain headings here. Inclusivity. Everyone can belong, even those who disagree with any creedal statements. The key to belonging is relational and bound in the shared values we hold, the way of love as Jesus lived. He said it should be safe. The church would need to be a safe place, safe for there to be room for different views. To be safe, we would be accountable to our shared values. For example, we can disagree, but the way we disagree or respond to differences is an outworking of our values of kindness, compassion and grace, etc.
Amen.
Yeah. Meetings. To be in relationship, we'd need to meet with other members of the church. This could be in person or virtual. Not sure if this needs to be geographically based, if virtual, although this would help with facilitating local community-based action. Under rituals, he's put eating together, baptism, communion, question mark. Worship, a richer expression than simply singing. Engaging with creation, walks, painting, engaging with the people around us, community, music, different styles, locally determined rather than centrally. All worship to align to our shared values.
Nice.
Probably not the watery enemy stuff.
I'm guessing not the drowning our enemies.
Nah, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Bible, not infallible or inerrant, but God-breathed, useful as we see the developing understanding of God over centuries culminating in the life of Jesus and how the New Testament writers / editors tried to apply the law of love within their context. Oh. Prayer, he says, prayer, hopefully someone else has inspiration here. We were going so well.
It was going well up till that point, yeah.
A couple of other things. Size, small enough to be relational, he says. And structure, size will determine structure. Even the early church found quickly the need for administrators and recognition of roles, etc. Mm. And then he says, and this is, I think, is what I want to pick up next week.
Yeah.
Visible. If we didn't exist, we'd be missed by the community around us. So something that would be missed if it wasn't there, which I think, Simon, if I may say, slightly goes against the virtual idea earlier. You know, I think that by its nature would have to be sort of physical. But I like those kind of headings. Mm. I think they're kind of useful to think about. So look, we're aware, so aware that that is a lot of talk and a lot of emails.
Mm. Yes, indeed.
Joe, what kind of struck you out of that? What kind of themes have really leapt out to you?
Well, I suppose I think this idea of really being known. So I know a lot of churches do that, don't they? They have the sort of Sunday celebration and then they have small groups, and the small groups tend to be sort of slightly more optional. I think I'd probably put things the other way round. I think I agree with all those comments about it's got to be a place where you're truly known and accepted and loved and valued for who you are. You can't really do that in a praise service because you've got to spend all that time singing about drowning your enemies.
Not drowning me. I mean praising me, obviously.
Yes, obviously. I thought you meant drowning you for a minute. No. So by the time you praised God and Nick, it doesn't leave much time to get to know you. So I think those smaller gatherings do seem to be quite important. And I certainly love the emphasis on inclusion. I think there's been probably slightly too much emphasis on all believing the same stuff, which is never going to happen. So I think Simon was saying about the shared values, the values of what we would call the kingdom of God, the Jesus values, kindness, love, all those kind of things. So, you know, developing those far more than you know, firm creedal statements or statements of our theology seems far more important to me. So, yeah.
I think there's lots of really interesting things in there. The thing that comes out to me is the sort of love for ordinary social interaction or the kind of normal human modes of it. So lots of stuff about food and eating together or drinking together or being together around a table where you can talk or meeting in the home or this kind of stuff. And so it seems to me that lots of people feel that's a huge thing that is missing from their spiritual experience. That honest, open, loving, familial kind of conversation around a table, around a meal, is completely absent from their church experience. Mm. I mean, this is obviously what you discovered, because that's why you did what you do. That setting opens people up in a new way, really. So I was very interested in that. And I don't think it's about not doing the other stuff. You know, I mean, I think it's about, I always think is we benefit from a mixed, a balanced spiritual diet.
Yeah.
You know, bit of evangelical roughage with the the rich dairy of liturgy. But, you know.
And the sheer heresy of progressive evangelicalism.
Yeah.
It's a gnaw on.
The purgative. I think that it doesn't mean you don't do the other bits, but there it seems to be commonly in that this desire to talk in a deeper way.
Yeah.
with people.
And you can't do that really on a large scale, can you? You can't do that in a meeting with hundreds of people.
No.
So I often think about the sort of Jewish idea of, you know, like there's the Sabbath and there's the family home and there's a lot of teaching that goes on there and around the meal table and everything. But the idea of festivals and the festivals is where you really go for the singing and the inspiring talks. And I like that because I feel like having done Soul Place for 10 years, what I would have valued is several times in a year. And this would be enough for me. To go for a good sing-song, to go and have a sense of we're part of something much bigger, even though most times we just meet in our dining room. Hey, don't forget we're part of a much bigger thing. And maybe for some people, going to Spring Harvest or something like that was that kind of thing. Maybe that was like going to the temple or to the Holy Land or something to sing God's praise. I don't know, but it seems to me that there does need to be small expressions and large expressions, because there's something lovely about feeling you're part of something big, you know, part of a movement. It's hard to feel you're part of a movement with six people, but if you have a, you know, hundreds of people together, or even a couple of thousand, I don't know, then you do feel quite inspired, I suppose. So somehow I feel there has to be a blend of all these things. And, you know, you heard there people advocating really small groups, but you also heard others saying about, well, it can work in a big way as well. So
in style and sort of setting, I think the vernacular seems to be very important. The ordinary, the your particular expression, your cultural expression. And I think this was, if you like, the sort of genius of communion, in a sense, that it's so simple, but it kind of crosses over all cultural boundaries, really. You know, the simple act of sharing food is a human thing. It's not a... It's not a particularly sort of sectarian thing. I mean, obviously they turned it into that because that's what Christians do. But you know, and I think to find the vernacular expression of your faith, like music, for example, what's the vernacular? One of the problems I think we have in certainly in England is that we've kind of lost touch with our vernacular style of music. We don't really have it. And so what we've replaced it with is pop. And which I suppose you could say is our style because we sort of invented it. But, you know, that it seems to me there's a kind of thing missing there in terms of how we present it in art and in its expressions. Is what fits an English setting or this setting, your local setting? I mean, I don't mean just England itself, you know, what fits the Scottish or Welsh or whatever. But or I believe there's that place that we talk about called America, is it? US?
I think it's America, something. Yeah.
Yeah, them. Anyway, you know, and so in some senses, a vernacular expression might be something big and glitzy, and that might be what you're used to. But it's what's appropriate. And the as I said, I think the genius of communion is that it's always appropriate. It's never... It's always scalable. It's never not appropriate. But that homeliness, that kind of social interactivity seemed to me to be a really strong theme that was coming out.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, what's clear is we do seem to need... I mean, I'd like to talk with you about the purpose of the church. What actually... Let's cut this right back to basics. What actually is the purpose of the church? And maybe we should be discussing that before we move into what mode and what form it should take. I don't know, but... I mean, certainly it seems that no man is an island. We all need encouraging to follow the Jesus way. So there has to be some element of community. I think whether it's two or three people, whether it's 200 or 300, perhaps is not the big issue. But encouraging one another does seem to be very important. It's hard to do it on your own.
Yeah, so maybe we can pick up on that next week. We'll think about the purpose of what we're doing. I'd like also, as I said, to sort of maybe pick up on as part of that, in terms of some people wrote in about the role of the church in its community. And I think that, looks
that
at the purpose of it helps with that. So, listen, this has been a feedback extravaganza, I'm aware. And, you know, it's feast or famine with us. Either we get, no feedback whatsoever, or we have this deluge. But anyway, thank you for listening. We will carry on with this theme. So, do feel free to write in. If you're listening a couple of weeks, you know, out or whatever, you know, later, do feel free to write. We're probably still going on it, so don't worry about that. In the meantime, where should people write to, Joe? Remind us.
Well, they could write to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. That would be very helpful indeed. That'd be great. I mean, as much as, you know, if you feel you've got something that hasn't been mentioned already, that would be particularly good to hear from you. We'll come back next week for a sort of part two. And then I suppose we'll start to sum up some of the common themes and as we have been trying to do already. But yeah, we'll draw conclusions and we'll tell you exactly how church should be next week.
Good, because I think that was the point of this exercise from your point of view. You're trying to find your next project, aren't you?
Well, I do need ideas, so thank you, everyone.
I mean, people thought it was sort of spiritual discussion. It's market research from your point of view.
It is.
Anyway, thank you to everyone who supports the podcast. That's lovely.
Yeah,
thank you to those who recommend it. Thank you to people who write nice reviews. Thank you to people who write in. Thank you for the music, the song I'm singing. I can't remember any more thank yous, so I think we'd better leave it there, really.
Thank you for everyone who voted for me.
We'll see you next week.
See you.